It's Border Crossings with Larry London from VOA Music Mix.
Hi, this is Border Crossings, and we welcome you to a very special program today. We have one of the biggest names in music for the last 20, 30 years. He is Jackson Browne, and he is with us on today's program. We'll talk about his brand new album, album number 14. We'll talk about his great career and a few other things along the way. Stick around. Jackson Browne joins us today on Border Crossings.
I don't know where I'm running.
Hi, this is Larry London. Welcome to Border Crossings. It's not often we get to welcome a true music icon into our studios. We'd like to welcome to Washington, D.C. for his brand new album. Jackson Browne is here at the Voice of America. Welcome, Jackson
Browne. Thank you, Larry.
It's great to have you here, and congratulations on everything that's been going on. And you just, you know, finished recording your 14th album. What is this feeling for you? You don't ever lose the excitement, do you? Each album you put out.
No, it's very exciting to finish the album. I mean, I've been working on this record off and on for a couple of years, and so it's great to have it bring it to fruition, you know, and to present it. You know.
Mm-hmm. And you're here in Washington at the start of another tour. And this particular tour is going to take you to a variety of different places, including the Royal Albert Hall in London.
Right.
That's got to be a fun feeling, something exciting.
It is. That's a special place to play. Mm-hmm. This tour really is, what's happening now is in presenting the record, you play as many places as you can, and so you combine some shows with television and various things like that. But I don't even think of it as touring, because touring is when you get on a bus and you do two on, one off for 2 or 3 months, and you're like, if this is Thursday, it must be Des Moines, you know, like that kind of touring. But right now it's really, really exciting because I get to talk to people about the record and about the songs, and that's very different than, you know, being in there, you know, in the studio, staring at the speakers.
You've gotten a number of awards and a number of accolades, and you've been honored in many different countries around the world for your accomplishments, your writing, your music sales, your music's been in films and all the different things. I want to go back to the beginning. When you first started, you were kind of a writer. I mean, and you got signed to be a writer when you were a young teenager.
Yeah.
So how did you discover that gift for writing? Because most 17, 18-year-olds don't really have a whole lot to write about.
I don't know. I just gravitated to it. I was playing guitar and singing folk music, and I started to write songs. And my friends did. I think I had two older friends who were 2 years older than I was and went to the same high school. And they started writing songs, amazing songs, topical songs about the civil rights movement, and love songs, and about growing up. And, you know, in fact, one of those guys I wrote a song with called The Fairest of the Seasons, and that was later used in the Royal Tenenbaums, but recorded by Nico. So, I mean, so I just started, I don't know how, but I started writing songs, you know, in high school. Mm-hmm. And it suddenly occurred to me that I might be able to do that rather than one of the other jobs, you know, I don't know what I was thought I would ever, you know, be good at. You know, I just thought this might work out. I also thought I might just be able to do that from anywhere. Mm-hmm. I thought I might be able to travel, live. I sort of pictured myself living in Greece or living in, you know, the mountains of Mexico or something, and being able to write. And then you'd send. I imagined that you could just send in your songs to some publisher, and they'd take care of getting other people to record them. But it doesn't work that way. And what's more is that the publishing business or the music business changed right then, so that everybody started singing their own songs. Mm-hmm. And if anybody did your songs, it was because they heard you do them. Mm-hmm. So that idea of just, like, you know, mailing in, that was probably a vestige of my like, you know, sending in my homework, you know, mm-hmm. that kind of mentality. But now, and then I became more interested in singing them myself because I heard other people do them, and I thought, I could sing it better than that.
Right. It's hard, you know, you listen and you know what your meaning was when you wrote that song. So for somebody else to interpret your music.
Well, I'm running down the road trying to loosen my load. I got seven women on my mind. Four, they're gonna own me. Two, they're gonna stone me. One said she's a friend of mine. Take it easy. Take it easy. Don't let the sound of your own wheels drive you crazy. It's a girl, my lord, in a flatbed Ford. the sound of your own wheels drive you crazy. Come on, baby, don't say maybe. I gotta know if your sweet love is gonna save me.
You had a great collaboration with Glenn Frey of the Eagles. That was kind of one of the first moments that you decided to write a song that became a number one hit of many, many
Well,
hits.
I wish you could just decide to write a number one hit. But all that really happened was that he kept asking me to finish that song because they wanted to do it. They were recording about 3 or 4 months after I was on the same label. And he said, you're not going to do it for your record. We'll do it, but just finish it. And then finally he said, you want me to finish it? I said, okay, and he made it the song that it is. I mean, he's the one that made it a number one hit, not only because of what he added to the song, but the way they recorded it and the fact that it was a number one hit for them. Mm-hmm. And when I sing that song and everybody sings along to it, I'm definitely singing with Glenn Frey. I mean, he's like, I hear his phrasing. So I wish you could just simply say, yeah, I think I'll get up today and write a number one hit.
Because that is a question I like to ask to songwriters is, when you've written a song, can you tell one song is going to be bigger than another when you're writing? Because you've written, for yourself, Dr. My Eyes.
I don't really like write with that in mind. So there are times when you write a song for its own reasons. It has its own reason for coming into being, and you have your own thing, the thing that you're trying to express. Some songs could be reimagined in a more commercial way. Somebody could hear that and say, and for that matter, I would try to interest Bonnie Raitt in doing one of my songs. She said, I want to hear some of your songs. And I play her a bunch of songs, and especially the ones I think she'd like. And she'd go, you got something else? And then she'd pick one that I would never have guessed that she liked. And then when I heard her do it, I went, oh, I want to do it that way, So I could do that. I could just send all my new songs to her, have her learn them, teach them to me, and then I could record.
And you've written with quite a collection of legendary musicians. I mean, Bruce Springsteen and quite a number of others, Linda Ronstadt. You work with, quite a catalog over your career.
Well, you said written, but I haven't really written with either of those guys. But
you didn't write with Linda Ronstadt.
Well, when you say write with, I think there's the idea that you write a song. If they recorded it, that you wrote it for them to record. But she's recorded some of my songs, a couple of my songs. But they're, once again, they're songs that I wrote for myself to sing, and that she just learned that way.
I want to talk about the new album, Standing in the Breach, which is a song on the album. Why did you pick that particular song to name the album after?
Well, the only other song that would have worked was The Long Way Around, but there was just something like, kind of like not very forward moving about, I don't know. Standing in the Breach, all my albums are always named after one of the songs on the album. And it wasn't until we found the photograph for the cover that I realized how emblematic of all the songs and all those particular moments that particular song is and the title is. I mean, in so many ways, we're all standing in a hall. We're all standing in a broken spot. Mm-hmm. Our country's broken. Politically, it really is. The dialogue is completely at a standstill. I mean, and so many of the things that happen in the news are disasters that we focus on while they're in the media and until the next one comes along. And there's like a succession of disasters that we focus on. So it's that breach, meaning that hole, that broken place that we're all standing in. So in that way, I think it's a suitable title.
And though the earth may tremble and our foundations crack, we will all assemble and we will build them back and rush to save the lives remaining still within our reach. Try to put our world together, standing in the breach. So many live in poverty, while others live as kings. Though some may find peace in the acceptance of all that living brings, but
I will never understand how ever they've prepared how one life may be struck down and another life be spared. And though the earth may tremble and cast our works aside, and though our efforts resemble fluctuating tide, we rise and fall with a trust and belief that love redeems us each, and bend our backs and hearts together, standing in the breach. You don't know why it's such a far cry from the world this world could be. Still try for the world you wish to see. You don't know how it'll happen now after all that's come undone, but you know the change the world needs now is there in everyone. Of history, the open wounds of time, the laws of human nature always tugging from behind. I want to think that the earth can heal and that people might still learn how to meet this world's true challenges, and that the course we're on could turn. And though the earth may tremble and the oceans pitch and rise, we will all assemble and we will lift our eyes to the tasks that we know lie before us and the power I pray cast our souls into the heavens, standing in the breach. You don't know why it's such a far cry from the world this world could be. You don't know why, but you still try for the world you wish to see. May not come, no, it may not come, but you know the change the world needs now is there in everyone.
This album together, and I know, you know, as a songwriter you've got quite a few songs that are in your head and songs that you put together. How did you pick the songs that you ended up putting on this particular album?
Well, it's just when you've got enough songs, you know, like it becomes an album, you know, like there are songs that command my attention, there are songs that I want to see finished, mm-hmm. and when you've got enough of them, you put them into an album, mm-hmm. and there, it may be that you need something and you decide, you know, I'm going to go back and get that other song because I need that to round out this, you know. Or you realize that, you know, in the case of Here, there was a song that had come out. It was very like that version. I changed it a little bit to put on this record, but it came out because it was part of a movie. Mm-hmm. But it didn't really get released, or the movie didn't really get seen by very many people, and so I thought I should really give this song a wider hearing, you know, by putting it on an album.
Mm-hmm. Have you ever been asked to write for a film,
a song
for a film?
That song here was written specifically for a film called Shrink, mm-hmm. a Kevin Spacey film mm-hmm. that was done like 2 or 3 years ago. And in that case, they also said, look, we want to use your music for this film, but you have to write, if you want to write something that is... will be considered for an Academy Award for best song in a, you know, mm-hmm. in a film, you have to write it specifically for that film. So, yeah, I've done it twice. I've done it a couple times. There's another song of mine that was written for the movie, I'll Do Anything, which then all the music was taken out, mm-hmm. but it was a musical. And although it's a certain kind of song when I sing it, it was going to be sung by Albert Brooks, mm-hmm. and it was going to be hilarious because it was a sincere song about love and how much these two mean to each other, but he's singing it to a test audience that's about to grade his movie. Mm-hmm. And so for that to be funny, it had to be extremely sincere. Mm-hmm. He would handle the, you know, making it funny. In the end, all the music was taken out of that film, and I was left with a song that I could sing, but I probably never would have written. Mm-hmm. I never would have decided to write that song for myself. So I don't mind those kinds of assignments. In fact, they probably lead you to do work that you wouldn't ordinarily do.
Mm-hmm. In my opinion, you're gifted and talented in all areas. In your opinion, which are you better at, songwriting or singing?
I'm definitely a better writer than a singer. But on the other hand, when I sing, I make sure that I, you know, sing the parts I can sing. You know, mm-hmm. I'm also the producer, so I edit myself pretty well too. Mm-hmm. I'll try anything, you know, I'll try singing anything. There are times when you realize, well, that's not really making it. Let's sing that a different way, or like, let's get somebody else to sing that. Mm-hmm. We sang the song at a benefit the other night for an organization called Jail Guitar Doors mm-hmm. that gets instruments to incarcerated people in prisons. And we wanted to sing I Fought the Law, you know, the Bobby Fuller song.
Fuller, yeah.
And I couldn't sing the bridge. I couldn't sing it in the high part, you know, but then to sing the bridge is even higher. So I wound up getting, and Tim Robbins was going to be there, so he wound up singing the high part, you know. It's just whatever will make it sound good, you know. I mean, I'm probably a better producer than I'm probably, you know. I mean, I'm my own producer by default. Mm-hmm. I'm like mm-hmm. the only guy I listen to, you know. So. Mm-hmm. But on the other hand, I'm actually pretty good at deciding what works and what doesn't work and continuing to look and to try things and to figure out ways of making a song work.
Bill, at this point in your career, you've earned the right and the privilege to be your own producer and to not take direction.
I would pretty much demand that from the beginning. I didn't want any producer. I didn't want anybody else to come up with... I always felt like I'm just about to figure this out. Let me. I want to do it. You know. So I always worked with engineers, mm-hmm. except for one or two notable instances after I'd gotten down the road a ways.
Mm. When I mentioned that you were going to be a guest on the show, immediately got a large response from the audience around the world, who are your fans and have been. And some of the questions were very interesting. One of the questions was to ask you why you chose Stay at the end of Loadout. Of all the songs that you could have included, why did you pick that song, which went on to be one of your biggest hits?
Well, that was a case of just knowing how that would work live. And it was really about, the song was about touring. I mean, the Loadout was about touring, and especially about how little time of the day was really spent, you know, doing that, the glorious, fulfilling, you know, playing with the band and singing for the audience. And I envisioned it from the beginning, even before we wrote the Loadout. We'll turn the encore around and ask the audience to stay, as opposed to having the audience giving us an encore asking us to stay. Mm-hmm. Be a way of like, no, oh, you want us to stay? No, we want to stay. You know, kind of. So that's another case of like having an assignment. I just decided like, okay, we're going to write this song. And I sat down with my bass player one night, and we just like thought of all the great stuff about touring that we wanted to relate, you know, mm-hmm. and made the song up that preceded it. But then also it changed the words a little bit in Stay. But that's a song that was like a huge hit when I was a kid, when I was 12 or 13.
People stay just a little bit longer. We wanna play just a little bit longer. Now the promoter don't mind.
Jackson Brown is our guest, and we talked about the fact that, you know, you began songwriting in your teens. Do you ever go back and look at some of the songs you wrote way back when and say, what was I thinking? Or did you ever actually say, this is pretty good, I think I'm going to do it?
Yeah, well, I always thought that my songs are pretty good, and I used to console myself that I wasn't a very good singer by saying, you know, but you write songs, you know, like, you know. And my friends used to tease me and, like, say, Jackson Brown School of Songwriting, I write them, I like them, you know. But really, the truth is that I heard an old demo of mine, and I thought, not only is the singing no good, but these songs aren't very good either. So hopefully you get better, you know. Mm-hmm.
Well, not many people have an album while they're alive that's a tribute album to them. You had one not too long ago.
Nice,
so
yeah.
That's a nice feeling to have people like, you know, all these big name stars come out and sing your songs in honor of you.
Well, and also some lesser known artists who are really, really great themselves, really interesting. Yeah, it is a great feeling. I like that album a lot. I didn't have anything to do with making it, but I really enjoyed it.
Mm-hmm. Have you thought about writing an autobiography about yourself, a book about your
autobiography?
Life? Yeah, an autobiography, memoirs, biopic,
something. I think about it. So usually when something's happening, then I think, you know, like, nobody would believe this. You shouldn't really write this down. I can't believe this is happening. But yeah, no, I think about it. It's been suggested a lot actually for the last 20 years, 30 years actually. People have said you should write, but it's always a different person with a different idea of what that would be.
Right.
But I like memoirs. Mm-hmm. Recently, I read Linda Ronstadt's memoir, which was really fascinating to me, and it was really not about her relationships with all the amazing men that she dated and had lived with, but about and was notably absent of all those kinds of accounts, but really about her progress as a musician. Mm-hmm. Which was of tremendous interest to me. And I don't know that I would actually be capable of writing either kind of biography. I don't know. I like writing. I mean, I like reading really great books, so I realized that I would have to write. I'd have to be able to write way better than I can to write the kind of book I would consider worthy.
Right. Putting it out there.
Now, being honest about it, you want to, if you're going to tell your story, it's got to be like an interesting, you know, and if you don't write, I could take off 20 years and learn to write, you know.
Mm-hmm. Well, use a ghostwriter if you want, you know.
That I'm not sure I could live with, but a friend of mine, Bruce Coburn, is about to release a book called Rumors of Glory, and he's one of the great writers in rock and roll and one of the great songwriters of the 20th century, Canadian. Bruce Coburn, one of my favorite writers, who's been able to talk about things that I couldn't. But what's in reading his memoir, and it was written with another writer, because he's done so many interesting things and been so many places, written so many songs about West Africa and Chile and places in the world. He's been able to write about particularly very political subjects in depth. I admire him greatly, and he's also a Christian and deeply spiritual person. So it took to tell his story. It's a very involved. I just sat there in awe looking at this book, reading parts of this book, because I just got it. I haven't been able to read it straight through. But I was just knocked out by how much he's done in his life and how worthy his life is of just being described. You know? Mm-hmm. You want that story to be told well. Maybe I should consider, like, maybe I should get that guy to write my book. you know? But I guess I think that I should be able to write, you know, my own autobiography.
Mm-hmm. Jackson Brown is our guest here on The Voice of America. And as you have been a part of all of the eras of music, you've been doing this since the 60s to today, you're still doing it 14 albums in. Do you have an era or a decade or a time period that is your favorite to have written in, or is it now?
Now.
Right now.
Right now.
Why?
I have a song on this album called If I Could Be Anywhere. If I could be anywhere right now, I would want to be here. But then it goes on to say, if I could be anywhere in time, I would want it to be now. Mm-hmm. Because what's going on right now is of utmost importance to the planet and to future generations. And there are a lot of exciting things happening. There are a lot of disheartening things happening. But I think that's exactly why we're all needed. We're all needed to come to the tasks of fixing this place, whether you think this place is our inner cities, or whether you think it's our medical system, or whether you think it's our political system, or whether you think it's some other place in the world where we have a particular, where our country feels that it has a particular interest. And these things are addressed in that song. I mean, or whether you think it's just music and what we're doing with it, you know? I mean, whether, I mean, it's I really believe that music has a role to play in healing. I mean, I don't long for any, to be in the past any, you know? I mean, we've been there. There's no place I would rather have lived, no era that I'd rather have lived than now. I think that all eras, all periods of time have their, you know, their dangers and their great benefits, you know, of not all, maybe sometimes don't have any great benefits. But I read an article once about, it was a dialogue, it was at the beginning of the millennium, and that was a bunch of historians discussing what their favorite time to have lived in would be. And it was fascinating because some guy was saying, oh, this particular era in Japan, it was about, you know, because, and when they give their reasons, it's very illuminating because of either what had just recently been discovered or what had not yet happened, you know. Like, it would be nice to, to live in a time pre-AIDS. Mm-hmm. I think it'd be nice for my children if they didn't grow up in a time when casual sex with a stranger, you know, wasn't like playing with a loaded gun.
Right.
But on the other hand, there's only one way through, and that's through. Mm-hmm. We have to get to the other side. We need to find a treatment for AIDS. We need to find a treatment for Ebola.
Right, right.
And that's actually being worked on, you know, I mean, like, I read the paper every day. It's amazing that we are not really prepared for the disasters that befall us regularly. I think there's a task here.
Listening to you speak on some of the issues here kind of brings back running on empty. That's a theme that runs through. Yeah, I'm sure it wasn't what you meant exactly when you wrote
this
song.
Well, it had that connotation. Mm-hmm. Yeah, the idea that you're running and you're living in a way that can't be sustained. Running on empty, like you're not really facing where you're headed, you know. Mm-hmm.
Now, Jackson Brown is our guest, and you have been involved with and lent your name or your support to so many different causes worldwide. I mean, Tibet and Darfur, and there's just an endless list of things that you have involved yourself with and supported in one way or another.
Well, it's easy to do it as a musician because that's one of the organizing tools, whether it's the Darfur album where people recorded their favorite John Lennon song, and, you know, that was a really well-organized thing. That was a case of Yoko Ono saying, here, you can have the publishing for all these John songs, and everybody will celebrate these, you know, covers of John Lennon songs. And it was fun to do musically, and it wound up sending money to the region that needed it. But that's not like being involved. That's not like being a member of, Doctors Without Borders and going to Darfur and dealing with those problems. I mean, I really admire those people who live in other parts of the world, and because they have a skill that's needed there. And they go there and they spend time really trying to create a change for the better. Mm-hmm. I admire that so much.
Now, you know, among the many accomplishments you've had, you know, which of course goes to being inducted into the Rock Hall of Fame and all the other things that come along with the success that you've achieved, is there a moment or an event that stands out to Jackson Brown? It could be music, it could be something else beyond music.
Anything
that you in that, your mind
the things that really stand out to me mm-hmm. are moments in the course of a fairly, you know, living in LA and like going to clubs and hearing people play and hearing, especially meeting, encountering people that I didn't know were there, and suddenly hearing some amazing musician playing, you know, maybe in a surf shop mm-hmm. or something. I ran into this really great songwriter on the boardwalk. This really cute 14-year-old girl, she had braces on, she was playing her guitar, and, you know, she was really good, and I was just walking along, and like a lot of other people had stopped, and there was this sort of crowd around this girl, and eventually her parents stepped up to me and said, you know, and sold me one of her CDs, you know. But it was really great, because I got to, there's something about, well, she was really brave, you know, for standing out there and singing. Mm-hmm. Later, there was she sent me this, and we became friends, and she sent me this newspaper article on the front page of the paper of the town where she lived in, where they tried to get her to stop singing on the street in San Clemente. She was singing in Venice, where, like, you can get a permit to do that. Mm-hmm. where San Clemente, the town fathers, trying to get her to start singing, and she like they she became like a local cause, you know, for people to say, don't tell her she can't sing on the street. And she's her quotes were something like, I'm just trying to do something that's real, you know. Mm-hmm. I'm just following a dream. And I thought, really, try to shut that down, town fathers. Try to shut down the 14-year-old girl who's pursuing her dream. Like, don't. But I mean, those are the moments, like encountering somebody that you didn't know before. I've met a lot of my musician friends that way, where you just happen to see them play and they become friends. And those are the things that come immediately to mind when you, you know, I mean, not the, you know, playing for the most people that you ever played for, or
even
the Hall of Fame, which is certainly a high point, you know. But it's also kind of surreal. It's not typical. It's not a typical thing of my life. It's a little bit like, you know, like somebody in an earlier interview today said that I'd been inducted in the Hall of Fame, and I said, "Oh, they can do that."
They took it away. They gave it and taketh away.
They've recently been inducted.
Bruce Springsteen didn't have anything to do with that. Jackson Browne is in our studios and has a new album called Standing in the Breach, and it's a 10-song collection of a variety of moods and a variety of feelings and issues, and you have some politics, you have love. Mm. We talked about the fact there's a little country-esque sound in one of the songs. So.
Well, that happened because the guy that plays in my band loves country music and is really good at it, and he invites me to play with his band all the time. Mm-hmm. And when I do, I mean, it's almost the most fun you can have, is to step into this like band and like play a country version of your own song. I mean, so when I came up with this song, it was because I knew I was going to play in Winslow, so I decided to write a train song. It was about a train, an art installation that was going from New York to. It was on the occasion of an art installation called Station to Station by Doug Aitken, very well known contemporary conceptual artist, and he invited me to get on the train, but I decided to join them in Winslow, where I knew that I would have a fairly good reception for singing Take It Easy. I thought before I sing him Take It Easy, I'm going to name check him once in another song, and I wrote this song. It's basically about riding the rails, about a hobo, really. Or is it about a Zen master? It's about a sort of Zen master hobo. Or is it about my father, my stepfather? It's one about one of those guys. My stepfather, Zen master hobo. Yeah.
And you
it's
said,
also got, you know, global warming and the Greenland ice shelf in it and disappearing middle class.
And dollar stores.
Yeah. 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 No, I no longer really want to write a song that's like a full frontal, you know, rock essay, you know. I mean, it's really hard to get people to listen to that. And even I don't want to. I mean, there are a few that I've tried that worked out okay, but basically it's a little easier to just refer to problems that everybody knows about, refer to things that people know, or to make a remark, you know.
Oh, how sad they sound the songs the queen must sing of dying. The prisoner upon her throne, the melancholy sighing. If she could see be free of those who bow and scrape the ground beneath her feet. Silently she walks among her dying midnight roses and watches as each moment goes that never really knows us. And so it seems she doesn't care if she has dreams of no one there within the shadows of her room. It all inside these empty halls.
maybe we found what we have lost when we've unwound so many crossed entangling misunderstandings. But all my frozen words agree and say it's time to call. Inside these empty halls,
wanted to go with the Birds of St. Mark's as the first single from the new album.
Yeah.
It's a good choice. It's the first cut on the album, and I also love that.
Yeah, it's a good opening. It's a good opening.
It is, really, really. I mean, for people who love Jackson Browne music, this is the quintessential Jackson Browne album.
Well, it's a song I wrote when I was 18. I mean, I've been waiting 46 years to hear the song played this way. And I even forgot about the song. I forgot about this song so thoroughly that I didn't even remember about this song when I was pitching songs to the Birds. Like, what if I had gotten the Birds to do this song? It still wouldn't have been as good because at one point I was invited to play songs for the Birds and see if they wanted to do any of them. And I wound up singing them, not only some of my songs, like For Every Man, which hadn't been cut yet, but I brought them some Jack Tamption songs, some J.D. Souther songs. And I totally forgot about this song, which I always figured should be played with 12 string and with a high harmony. You know, but they might have done it then, or they might have, or maybe it wouldn't have had the Crosby harmony, which we tried really hard to get on this. I just did it as a total. I called Greg Gleason and said, "You want to try to like make this song? Mm-hmm. Let's make this sound like the Birds if we can." You know, mm-hmm. And so we literally, which wouldn't have been so cool if they were still together, but I mean, you know,
we've
been waiting for those of us who love the Birds. We've been waiting for them to reform for 40 years.
Well, it's, you know, first of all, it's an honor to have you in our studios and to be able to meet you in person. I've listened to all the songs and I remember you when I was growing up in Detroit and you played Pine Knob and I've seen you for years in concert and love your music. And so when you listen to the radio today, what do you think? What are your thoughts? I mean, as a pioneer, as a legend through rock music, and you put it on and Jackson Browne's reaction to what is out today?
Well, I keep lending my cars to people that change the stations, you know? So I'll get in and I'll go, what's this? And I discovered a station the other night. It's a radio, I guess it's a caller station, KLSU or KLSU. And there's some late night cowboy Nick, you know, like it's like the most esoteric country music. And because I'm hanging around with pedal steel players and Val McCallum is a great country guitar player. I just fell in a big country hole that night. It's like for an hour listening to this really incredibly, some of it was really old stuff like Merle Haggard and Rose Maddox. Some of it was some new bands playing country music. I thought, this is amazing. It's like an indie country. So the radio is still that place of discovery, you know, and I like how many stations there are. I like the satellite stations. I really like listening to Little Steven's Underground Garage. Mm-hmm. In the middle of the night, I've heard this great artist named Andrew Graham and the Swarming Branch. Completely indie, completely outside of the box. And I guess I wouldn't know about them if I wasn't, you know, flipping through channels. Mm-hmm. I became a commuter in the last 3 or 4 years. I used to live about 5 minutes from my studio. Mm-hmm. So there was no time to really get into the radio between studio and home. But now I got like about 40-minute commute on the way in and about 15 minutes on the way home. And I got so many examples of like finding stuff that I wouldn't know about otherwise. So I like radio, and I sometimes wish that we still all heard the same station. Because we all grew up, people my age grew up listening to the same radio station. There may be two stations in L.A. There was KHJ, KWB, or then there are all these stations on NPR. Like NPR, like the KCRW show. Once again, KCRW is the station of a college. It's a college that became an arbiter of taste for the entire country. It kind of remade people's idea of radio. But that's where there still are DJs playing songs and talking about the relationship between them or juxtapositions. And they do that on satellite, and they do it on these college stations. And as much as I wish we all listened to the same station, there's more is more, I suppose. You know, like more is more stations. You have many more choices, and you can now have Pearl Jam radio and Bruce Springsteen radio,
right.
And like, you know, Tom Petty, you know, Buried Treasure radio. My favorite is Little Steven's Underground Garage, where they have really great, iconic, old-time DJs, including Andrew Lug Oldham, who managed the Rolling Stones, or Michael DeBar, who, you know, like himself a rock star, talking about the music. It's fantastic.
You know. Well, I mean, the radio's changed, the broadcast business has changed, technology's changed in the way that you make music as well, from when you started to today. I want to read a quote to you and get your reaction and see if you agree or disagree. This is from a contemporary of yours, Gene Simmons, from the band Kiss. He said, "Rock did not die of old age, it was murdered." And that is in reference to illegal downloading. What are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, I agree with him in that it's not. What he's referring to is that if you don't pay people for doing it, they're going to go do something else. They have to make a living. People that, you know, even though my father said, you know, you're going to want to get married and have a family, and then you're going to have a real job. And I remember looking at him and saying, I don't think I want to do that. as ungrateful a sentence as I've ever uttered. But the truth is that we do want to do that, even if we are, you know, whoever we are, you know, even if we are entirely rebellious and don't think we want to, I mean, you got to get paid. So the problem is that it's now been relegated to, like, if people don't think, and it's funny, I just got reading this article. It was about Anonymous, that online sort of way people have of organizing themselves, and the hackers and stuff, and really the pervasive attitude is that, oh, we shouldn't have to pay for this. There's a hilarious moment in that long forgotten, long lost, but then unearthed Festival Express, which is a film about a rock festival that went across Canada on trains, and it was Janis Joplin, the Grateful Dead, the band, Buddy Guy, the Burrito Brothers. And there was a moment where they got to this one place in town in Canada, and then nobody wanted to buy a ticket. And like these hippies were out there saying, like, this is our music, man. We don't have to, we don't have to buy any tickets, man. These are our bands, our music. So they send Jerry Garcia out there to explain to them why they have to buy a ticket. It's really cute because he's like this, the young Jerry Garcia is like kind of, looks like a teddy bear. He's saying, no, man, the reason you have to buy a ticket is it costs, you know, the train costs money. The speakers have to, you know. If you don't support the infrastructure of what makes the music, just because the technology to make the music is now available after a fashion, you know, you still have to pay people for the time that they use, that they do. You know, there has to be the allure of some sort of prosperity in doing that.
Well, Jackson Brown, thank you very much for coming on the show and being with us.
Thanks for having me.
What an honor it is to have you in our studio. Standing in the Breach is the new album. What a great birthday present for you to be celebrating your birthday right around the time that the new album comes out. So happy birthday.
Thank you.
And congratulations on the album. Come back and see us again when you're here in Washington.
All right, thank
you. It's been an honor and a pleasure.
Thank you, Larry.
Thank you. This is the Voice of America. I'm Larry London.
When we return, it's more requests and dedications right here on the VOA Music Mix Network. So please get your requests into us by email, bordercrossings@voa.gov. You can go to twitter.com, send a tweet to BCVOA, or facebook.com/VOA Larry London. I'll see you real soon. This is Border Crossings.
Larry's on Twitter. Follow him at ABC VOA.